deep understanding must arise during these times of unparalleled deceit. A view into the depths of society upon which this country has fallen. A storm brews upon the horizon. It's been said that those that have the eyes to see and the ears to hear will play a paramount role in the furthering of humanity and civilized society. But can civilized society and humanity survive the coming conflicts not seen since a dawn of time in ages bypassed? But you can find true forms of information and knowledge in abundance at revolution.radio, freedomsluts.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the globe. Stand upon the right side of history. Right side.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
It's just a game, and all you can do is play. And that's what they're telling me right now here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.net, freedomslips.org, revolution.radio on this day, March 20th, 2024. Man, what kind of a day is this? What is a March 20th day like this for you out there in Radio Land, here on the radio where we are today, the internet radio, the broadcast network of the World Wide Web, coast to coast, nation to nation, continent to continent, and here we are. A little bit emptier today, as we had lost another here, not just in Revolution Radio, but throughout the territories, wherever this person was ever known, throughout their life, whatever trials and tribulations they ever had, from birth to grade school to junior high, high school, and you know, their 20s and their 30s, and whatever life took them throughout the course, whosever life, whatever they did for themselves, whatever they did and shared with the others, whoever enriched their lives or vice versa, we are less one more as of, you know, the last couple weeks, which is a sad case. It's a big wow, a W-O-W wow for you out there, and you all know it. It's a wow because, you know, I don't know what this age range anyway. It's all blown out of the water who the age range people die anymore because of all the, you know, the pandemic stuff and, you know, the poisons in the water and the food and the medications and the air and all the stuff. So really, it's our scale of longevity is just so darn messed up. So it's hard to tell anymore, especially after the what they call the COVID era. You mean the bioweapon terrorism, all that stuff that was going on, that they were forcing people to, you know, into all sorts of crazy stuff. To either people were taking their lives, or they were, you know, forcing these people into situations where it was, you know, pure and sudden death. So life expectancies is pretty crazy. But, you know, when I was growing up, for the most part, and I'm still growing up, I guess, I'm still, you know, day-to-day here myself, so I'm still growing up. But when I was younger, these things, you know, dying at a certain age, under a certain age, was considered young. What age is that? Like 70? What did it used to be? 80? Did it used to be? You know, I had a stepfather who died at 49. He had a massive heart attack. He was driving home from work one night. It was late at night. It was on a weekend, doing one of his part-time gigs, and he had a massive heart attack himself. Boom, dead, boom, right in the middle of the street, in the car, boom, they never revived him. And he was 49. And that's always haunted myself and my family, you know, that he died young. So I think our friend here, who you guys all know is Seth. Well, you know him as the mechanic, a.k.a. the mechanic, but his real name was Seth Guthrie. But in any case, I think he was in that age range, 49 to 52. I don't know exactly because I never, you know, necessarily asked him his age. I mean, these are the things I just don't ask people. I don't know why. I just don't. I mean, unless they're just, I don't know, too young or real or something, you know, point to it. But, you know, I never got around to ask. I just think he's in the age range of 49 to 52, somewhere in there, 49, 50, 51, 50. I don't know. But for what happened to him, is a crazy loss. I mean, too young. It's too young. I mean, but in the COVID age, it's like, oh, gee, you're an old man. You know, after people are taking these shots, I mean, if people are dying at all ages, you know, and craziness with their, you know, remdesivir and, you know, putting them on ventilators and giving them a bioweapon jab and all this other stuff they've been doing, you know. So, gee, if you make it to the prime age of 49, 50, oh, my gosh, you're just beating the system anymore, are you? I don't know. It's just a gain to them. They have no value of human life, do they? They don't. None of them. These crazy, you know, people with power and money, you know, they got money or whatever. They were born with money or they came into money. But if they got money and any big amounts of money, you're in this club or we're going to make you broke or dead. So a lot of the people just say, hey, well, I like having all this, you know, mega riches. So I don't want to be broke or dead. So I'll be in your club. So all these people are manipulating the world in all facets: poison, the food, the air, you know, all the narratives, the climate change, and you know, flooding the countries with foreign nationals that are freaking just, you know, basically what, street shitters. You know, what's this person from Haiti? I mean, this person from Haiti is just a person of color with a low IQ. No, they're literal freaking street poopers. Okay. They're coming to a neighborhood near you to poop in your street and wash your butt in your water fountains and drinking fountains and, you know, whatever else, off your hoses and so forth. You know, so this is what these nefarious globalists do. But in any case, I digress. So we lost another one, you know, who I used to introduce every Wednesday. You know, first at the high, you know, for however long it was the High Council, and only in recent months it turned into Get a Grip, and, you know, the mechanic and any number of cast of characters that he may have on with him. It was any number of cast of characters, such as Sergeant Miller or Two Feathers, formerly 22 Feathers, or, you know, who knows? Who knows would have showed up and so forth. Speaking of which, anybody hear from Daryl? I haven't heard from Daryl in a while. He kind of concerns me, Mr. Walmart, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's out hunting squirrels. I don't know. But hopefully we hear from Daryl, because Daryl's been off radar for me as far as things go. So hopefully he's okay, but You never know. You just never know. But it's all just a game to them. They have no value of human life. And in our communities here, you know, the people out here, the outspoken, the people that have taken notice and haven't for years, and chose what we were going to do, tried to make the decisions ours rather than somebody else's and so forth, we lost another one. Their fight is over. This is the unfortunate thing, you know. Their fight is over. So what happens then? I mean, depends who you are, what your thoughts are, what your upbringing is, your spirituality, your religion, who knows. But for this realm, for this plane, the fight is over. And it's just a crazy thing. But at least they lived their life on their terms for the most part. They didn't get stuck off into some war where they're, you know, some foreign country in you know, Afghanistan, Middle East, you know, wherever throughout this world fighting, you know, somebody else's a banker's war. They were fighting a banker's war here on their U.S. soil. Yeah, COVID, it's another banker's war of globalist war, but also a banker's war as well. There's money involved, right? But at least they got to do the things on their terms here in for what we had. But it's just crazy. You know, it's just crazy. War and death and these things are just, you know, something at a later age is something you didn't really think about younger, but at a later age is kind of like trips me out that, like, say, sending off our young people to war, whatever war, doesn't matter. Throughout history, young men going to war, that a mother birthed a child, excuse me, a child was birthed, was raised, however conditions they were raised, let's just say in a loving household, they were taught to be, you know, good manners, and they were taught the alphabet and the ABCs and math, and they got to play and work around the house and all this stuff, and they were raised and they were somebody's child. And then come of the ripe old age of 16, 17, 18, they're shipped off to war, and it just takes one incident, one thing, their life is over. That's 18 years or more of somebody's life that somebody, some family, a mother, father, siblings, so forth, extended family, raised somebody, had them in their life. And all of a sudden, because of these bankers, these globalists, these freaking sinister, evil entities, decide that they're going to take your life, somebody's life, and send them off into a foreign conflict or into a conflict that they created so they can go and murder each other. And it's just over. All that time invested, all that stuff, all that life that never was had. Many people, that's just, throughout history. But especially here, just take it home. Let's reel it in. The United States history. From the time we landed on the shore of the United States, the wars that were created here. You know, you got your Revolution War, you got your freaking Civil War, then you got, you know, World War One, World War II. Just our history, the people we've lost. Just crazy stuff. Just boggles the mind. But it also makes you draw back in your own mortality. Who, you know, what kind of days do you have left? What are you going to do with your life for the rest of your days? How has your life been? Do you have those regrets? I shouldn't even bring up that word. I mean, you know, you got those people out there, I have no regrets. Man, I got nothing. I got regret over regret over regret. Regret of what I regret of the stupid things I've ever done. Regret of the things that I never did or should have done. And I don't know. That's just a plague. Plague of regret. But that's just me. And I'm hard because I'm hard on myself. I'm one of those people that have always been hard on themselves. So I don't need you freaking judging me. I've done it all by myself. But in any case, triumph and just a game. But anyway, let's pick this one up.
You got to read between
That's right. Fight the good fight every moment. It's your only way. So if you're living a good life and you're fighting a good fight, if you're trying to do good, if you're, you know, following through and being good and whatever, that's really, truly, you know, I mean, it's a start. It's not all you can do. But if you that's your focus, you can only, you could improve on it always. How about that? Something you can constantly improve on. If you're set out to be, you know, good or bad, if you want to set out to be a bad person, I mean, you can improve on being the worst sinister son of a gun on planet, the face of the earth, like the rest of these freaking globalists, people harming every living being or non-living entity in this whole universe, you know. But if you focus to be good, fighting the good fight, you can only improve. With practice comes improvement and follow through. Just going through the motions and putting an effort to that. You fight that good fight. I got this little piece here that I don't know how this is going to play out, but I want to try it.
Oh God, whose end is justice, whose strength is all our stay. Be near and bless my mission as I go forth today. Let wisdom guide my actions. Let courage fill my heart. And help me, O Lord, in every hour to do a ranger's part. Protect when danger threatens. Sustain when trails get tough. Help me hold my standard high and smile at each rebuff. And when night comes down upon me, I pray the Lord be nigh. Whenever on a lonely scout or camped under Texas sky. Keep me, O God, in line. And when my days shall end, forgive my sins and take me in. For your sake, amen.
Ray! Aim! Fuck! Ray! Aim! Fuck!
On behalf of the state of Texas, the governor, and all the Texas Rangers, I present this flag to you in honor of your husband.
So that was a scene for a funeral scene of the death of a Texas Ranger. It's just, I don't know, good little speech, whatever, that I wanted to pick up and throw in there. I don't know how fitting it is for this moment, but, you know, I think those are some good words, even though it's a law enforcement Texas Rangers kind of theme. But in any case, welcome to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.org, freedomslips.net, revolution.radio, 13 years in running, Studio A, Studio B, again, here live on a Wednesday. It's high noon, and this is The Brew with you on March 20th, 2024. It is one heck of a day. It's kind of like Chicagoland, kind of like kind of springy, but, you know, the weather's a little wonky. It's just who the heck knows? I don't know. I got sick. I got really deathly sick a couple weekends ago. Man, I came home from work and I was just in bed. Oh man! So I'm still on the mend, whatever, taking oil, oregano, all that other little stuff and so forth, trying to keep myself healthy and sane. And well, neither one are working out for me. But anyway. I don't know. I'm just joking. But anyway, you know, hit that donate page at revolution.radio, you know, the network, blah, 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 the network, and definitely use your help. A lot of people have been here and come and gone over all these years. And some left with their feet first out the door, on the death pyre. So, it's unfortunate, you know, forced retirement for many, for all too many, including the
network founder, Nighthawk himself. So anyway, if you can help us out here at Revolution Radio Studio, Studio B, 7 days a week and all this other good stuff we're trying to do is we're getting into an election year, the 2024 election year, where all the craziness is, you know, never ending. It's just ongoing, never ending craziness. You may need something like Revolution Radio to have the airwaves open to tune into, just in case something happens to any one of the other ones, such as InfoWars and Rents and RBN, and you never know. You just never know. So as many doors as we can keep open here in the independent media is the best we can do, and the better off we're going to be, just in case. You got to have a just-in-case plan, okay? All right, so this was Mitchell Henderson played yesterday, and gosh, I'm probably not even going to get it all in. Let's see what I can do here. But I want to play Mitchell Henderson. They're going to talk about Russia and Ukraine and, you know, the craziness of World War. You know, they're trying to implement this World War III, you know, because they just want to murder. You know, just murder. They love a murder. You know, and your not-so-friendly neighborhood international Jews are, you know, behind every freaking door. You know, every little drone attack, every little NGO, every migrant that comes across that border has got a little, you know, Jew, you know, Star of David tattooed to the freaking heel, I'm sure. You know, just to let them know who owns them and who they owe their lives to and so forth. That's what's going on. So the Jewpocalypse is upon us. So let's pick it up with Mitchell Henderson.
Mitch, welcome back, and what are your thoughts about a preemptive move by Russia, knowing that they are going to get pasted at some point? Hello.
Well, I don't think Russia's going to make a preemptive move. I'm going to talk about this in the thing, but I want you to keep in mind that, you see, it is white people that have to be exterminated, because remember
right.
That thing of Hegel, the history of the philosophy of history?
Oh, yes.
You see, the people in Asia, they're Oriental. They have the Oriental civilization. And then you have in the rest of the world, all these people, like you either have in Asia, you either have one person basically free to do anything they want. That could be Kim or that could be Chairman Xi. Or you have small cliques of people, elites, that run everything. And then if you go to Latin America, it's small cliques that run everything. Okay.
Right.
So they're not civilizations or peoples with individual freedom. This is a war against individual freedom. Okay, they want everybody to be slaves. They can enslave the other people. It's white people they have problem enslaving, so they got to get rid of them. Okay, it's just sort of how it is. You know, that's why we're the target. Okay, so you know, I'm going to go over. This is a likely scenario for the Civil War and World War III. Okay. So for the purposes of this narrative, I will call the progressive Marxist woke just woke. I will call Christian individualists and those who believe in our Constitution and Bill of Rights patriots. So it's the woke against the patriots. Nothing
right.
seems to make sense in current events. It seems like our leaders are making incredibly stupid decisions. This is the fog of war. What military intelligence does is try to make sense out of what does not make sense to arrive at the enemy's intention. And that's basically what I've done here. The enemy works hard to disguise their true intentions, to misdirect you, or outright deceive you. This is called counterintelligence. The world leaders would like you to think that things just happen sort of by accident, like we just drift into it. But everything that happens is intentional. If you can define the enemy's goal, then things can make sense in that context. I'm assuming here that the goal is the World Economic Forum goal of the Great Reset. With that in mind, as the template laying out the enemy's intention, we can divine their plan from current events. Okay, that's how we can interpret what's going on. So the Civil War in America will break out in November 5th, 2024. We can know this because it will not be an organic or spontaneous civil war, but a planned civil war. We can tell because the Democrats insist on running Joe Biden. That does not make rational sense, but it does make sense that they have a plan.
And their plan has also been in to bring, around 10 million invaders, fighting age men, in the last 3.5 years.
It's planning.
It's on the table. It's right in front of you.
So, you see, if Joe Biden won the election, most people would be convinced that there are, in fact, free and fair elections. They would know that American constitutional democracy is over. What would people do? They will live with it, passively resist, become apathetic towards politics, become skeptical of everything, and basically withdraw from public life. There won't be a mass of white people rebelling. They will not take arms. They will not take their country back. This will not happen. They know that the white people will not do this.
So sad to hear that, but you're so correct. We just don't have it. We're not the same. We're not the same European Americans we were a generation ago. That's gone. They're gone. What we have now is
this is because they are individualists and focus on their mortgages, their car payments, and their kids' education.
They're consumed with themselves.
This would not be a sufficient crisis to implement the Great Reset. That's not going to work for them. However, if Trump wins, Antifa and BLM will revolt and start burning down America on November 6, 2024. Their 8 million-man army of illegal immigrants will also riot and run rampant, raping, pillaging, and plundering. The U.S. military and law enforcement at the federal and state levels will stand down. So will law enforcement in the major cities in the metropolitan areas. This will be billed as a war to, quote, save our democracy from the MAGAs. And a MAGAT is a MAGA person. That's what the woke people call them, MAGATs.
That's right.
And deplorables who cling to their Bibles and their guns. Make no mistake that the clingers meme is about the First and Second Amendment. It is about our Constitution. They want to save our democracy from our Constitution. They have 86 days before Inauguration Day on January 20th, and Trump will never be able to take office. The woke will seize the initiative from the outset and will maintain the initiative with the help of the army of the illegal aliens. Some state National Guards will side with the people, but not many. Biden will quickly federalize them so they won't be under the command of the governors. The patriots will be very reluctant to organize and defend themselves. They will get slaughtered. It will take a lot for the patriots to get motivated. And the woke hope to use that lag time to wipe them out. Yeah. The woke have been actively organizing in preparation for this war, especially after January 2021 when Biden was installed in office. With the institution of DEI and the Department of Defense, with Homeland Security doing the equivalent of DEI with our immigration system, allowing millions of undeserving people of color across our borders, with the Department of Treasury impoverishing Americans through artificially induced inflation, with the Department of Justice encouraging rampant crime through their policies, with the Department of Labor encouraging DEI in every industry, and with the Department of Education forcing Marxist indoctrination of our children, and with the FBI and ATF actively hunting down and arresting patriots and identifying their enemy by spying on social media. The woke have prepared the battlefield for woke victory. Patriots are not prepared. They were waiting for their government to be rational, fair, and just, when that was never a possibility. When patriots
aspect to this, and it's very disturbing. I wouldn't have thought that this would ever have made it this far. 25% of Generation Z, and that's 28-year-old and under, right? Fighting age. 25% identify with LGBTQ+. 25%. Now that's the admitted number. Is that a correct number? Yeah. Probably. These young people are so confused.
30%.
They're so confused. They're never going to find themselves. Their lives are basically over. They're never going to figure it out. Yeah. No, they're so confused now. It's ridiculous.
Total darkness. So when patriots finally start fighting back, there will be outrage at their terrorism. And the Patriot Act will be used to deny them any protections of the law whatsoever. How dare we defend ourselves? They have been fostering that mindset for years by arresting and charging people for murder when they were defending themselves. The left has been doing intensive psychological preparation of the battlefield. January 6th was a psyops to keep white people from daring to protest. It was meant to shut white people up and keep them from organizing. It has been immensely successful. When we look at foreign affairs, it also... So go ahead, Jeff.
All true. That's all I'm saying. You're 100% on. Yep, as usual. You're right.
So when we look at foreign affairs, it also makes their intentions clear for World War III. You see, they tell the people of America and Europe that Russia is a threat to democracy. I want you to first consider who the threat to peace, world order, and national sovereignty actually are. The United States has created failed states in Somalia, Libya, Yemen, Iraq, and Afghanistan. We have, without UN approval, invaded and occupied Kosovo and Serbia and northeastern Syria. These were not sanctioned by the UN and were against international law. We overthrew the legally and popularly elected government in Ukraine and installed a hand-picked puppet government in 2014, orchestrated by the U.S. State Department regime change Karen Victoria Nuland.
She bragged about spending, I think, $5 billion to accomplish that overthrow.
She makes no secret of it. She's very proud of it. And keep in mind, she is a Jewish person. Okay.
Yep.
And her husband, Robert Kagan, he's a big neoconservative warmonger, and he's Jewish also. So the truth is that the U.S. government knows that Russia has no intention of invading NATO or a NATO nation. How can we tell? Because Victoria Nuland was passed over for the number two post at the State Department in favor of war with China guru Kurt Campbell. You may think this would bait Russia into going ahead and taking advantage of this to invade Ukraine and finish their objectives. Think about this realistically. Is America so arrogant that we thought we could impose modern woke government on a medieval tribal Islamic Afghanistan? Or did we just want a failed state in Afghanistan? Did we really think American power was so awesome that we could control Afghanistan when the British and Soviets before us failed so miserably? We failed just as miserably as our predecessors did. Then just think, we pick on another nation with a similar history. Both Napoleon and Hitler invaded Russia, and they not only failed horribly, but it led to the downfall of Napoleon's and Hitler's empire.
That's right.
Are we so arrogant that we did not think we would fail against Russia? Could we be so incredibly stupid, or did we want to fail? That's a
There's a mix. I agree. It's on the table. Yes. So remember, nothing is left to chance, Mitch. Yeah. No, you know that.
Nothing is left to chance. I mean, they have to make some adjustments, you know, adapt.
That's
a
all.
Little bit,
fine tuning.
Our true intentions were to bankrupt Russia and make life so miserable for the Russian people that they would rebel and Russia would collapse. Of course, they knew that the NATO nations would also collapse from economic stagnation, and all of Europe and North America would be ready for the Great Reset. It did not work out this way, but they have a plan B. At January 20, 2025, the riots, anarchy, murder, mayhem, it will be burning on in the United States. The patriots are being genocided while the military and police stand by. Biden has declared martial law, and it is impossible to inaugurate a new president due to the anarchy. Imagine, the American Civil War rages on until the ground dries out in Ukraine. The Russians decide that it's time to conclude their special military operation. They sweep across the Dnieper River in the north, in the west to Odessa. They do exactly what they say they will do. To avoid future conflict with Romania, they leave Chernivtsi for Romania, Zakopane for Hungary, and at least Lviv and Voron for Poland. They will take the east bank of the Dniester River, Transnistria, from Moldova. The Europeans will cry about being in mortal threat of invasion by Russia. They know that Russia is not going to invade them, but that is not the purpose of the shrill warnings. In America, they will say that the patriots are traitors, enabling the Russian victory and putting America at mortal peril. It will be the rallying cry for the total extermination of people who are not woke. Finally, the U.S. military and law enforcement will be unleashed on the patriots to hunt them down and exterminate them. Under the cover of NATO, the Europeans will have to come to America, America's aid, and European troops will once again be on American soil to fight against freedom. They know they can send them because they know Russia has no intention of attacking. They just won't admit that to their own people because they want them to be afraid. As things deteriorate, finally the United Nations will have to send in peacekeepers to implement the Great Reset in America. You see, America with its constitution is the greatest obstacle to the World Economic Forum's plans for the Great Reset. The American Constitution is all that stands in the way of progress. Financially and economically, the Second American Civil War will break both the United States and Europe. NATO armies are not very impressive. They can slaughter innocent civilians, but they cannot stand against a modern army. Consider that the American army, which considers itself the best army in the world, could not beat an unorganized gaggle of Afghani goat farmers in 20 years. Can they really fight a modern organized army? The American Civil War will destroy America and Europe for the World Economic Forum, but who will destroy Russia? Well, remember all the talk going on now about how Russia is going to attack NATO? It is not the case, but the point is that they are preparing you for World War III by making Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran look like they are a mortal threat to us. The pretext for war will be simple. They tell us that Russia simply cannot be allowed to win in Ukraine. As Russian troops sweep across Ukraine, NATO will cross all Russian red lines by sending NATO troops into Russia, allowing long-range weapons to attack Russian targets in Russia, and launching NATO jets from NATO soil to enforce a no-fly zone that violates NATO neutrality. Russia will be forced to go nuclear, and if they don't, NATO will, out of desperation, they will launch an attack. This will kill many Russians, but remember that they have pretty good national civil defense program.
They can get the entire population of Moscow into supposedly nuclear survival shelters underground within 40 to 45 minutes. The whole city. They've rehearsed it, and they've rehearsed it, and everything is stocked and carefully groomed and manicured and ready to receive millions of people. That's a country that cares about its population.
Oh, yeah. They value their people. We do not value ours. Russia will launch a retaliatory strike on the United States that will put an end to our civil war. Now all of the European nations on Earth will be destroyed, and the remaining people will be those from Oriental and elite-driven societies. These are more compliant people. The world is now ready to go into the Great Reset program. The switch up in the State Department shows that we are trying to focus some attention to a war with China. When China sees us in civil war, they will launch a blockade of Taiwan. They will want to keep Taiwan intact as much as possible. The first arm of the Chinese strategy is to do area denial against U.S. forces. They have the capability to do that conventionally. They will have their nuclear forces on standby. Their nuclear strategy is to disrupt American logistics. Their first-tier targets are Yokota, Okinawa, Guam, Darwin, Honolulu, Anchorage, Vancouver, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, Chicago, Houston, Washington, D.C., and New York. They can destroy American power with this one attack.
What's your thought about neutralizing everything with an EMP or several EMP bursts first?
Well, any attack on the United States is going to have a minimum of one EMP burst over the U.S. and possibly
I'm sure.
two. I would put two. I'd put one in the West and one in the East.
Just to
burn everything up. I mean,
remember
you can shut down our economy. You know?
Don't forget about Denver and the idea of flying into DIA and getting the underground maglev into the mountain shelter. They got big cities apparently under the mountains outside of Denver, to the west of Denver.
Yeah, that's to the west of Colorado Springs, China Mountain.
Yeah, now that's okay. The center of the country, and it's easiest location for people to get to.
The
special people. I'm not talking about us.
Yeah.
The special people.
It's not us. It's special people. That's true. But China does not want to deal with the American retaliatory strike. They can do this by one of two methods. First, they can wait until the United States nukes Russia and Russia has launched the retaliatory strike. Then the United States won't have very many missiles to retaliate with. If they cannot wait, they can have North Korea do the exact same strategic strike to destroy American logistics. North Korean nuclear strategy is identical to Chinese, okay? They're complementary to each other. Or we may just remind us of the threat China is to our security and tell us about how China is taking advantage of our civil war, that we launch a preemptive strike on China because it's an existential threat to us.
Yeah, yeah. Real quick, the Chinese have 5.5 million CCP members right here now legally in this country, not to mention the 100,000 plus who have come in under the Biden, the O-Biden no borders policy. So there's a lot of Chinese here ready to get involved instantly. And they could launch a million-man army with no trouble at all. Hold on just a second. We'll be right back with Mitchell Henderson right after this. We are looking at an ever-increasing pressure being put on Russia, the invasion of Russia twice by the Ukrainian military in the last 10 days now, I guess. They were tried to send one command, I want to say commando squad, but it was more than that. There were tanks, there were troop carriers. They had a lot of people on the ground that tried to make it to Belgorod. It didn't happen, but that was an overt, direct invasion of Russian territory by the Ukrainian military. And that was just one of two. So I don't know how much longer they're going to put up with this, the Russians. And you also have to ask yourself, how can these attacks continue? They're shooting down, we know, the Russians are, scores of drones, sometimes in a 24-hour period. They can't stop that kind of warfare. It's very expensive to shoot drones down, which costs a few $100 or a little more, but depending on the type of drone. But it's getting to be now where I don't know how much more the Russians could or should tolerate, Mitchell. I really don't. Their red lines have been crossed plenty of times.
What the Ukrainians are doing in these little invasions of Russia, they're not hurting Russia in any way, shape, or form. These do not hurt Russia. Strategically, tactically,
operational. Oh, I understand. I understand it's not harming them.
Russia.
I get it.
But what the Ukraine's doing it for is propaganda purposes, okay? To say, oh, we struck Russia, you know. But they're making a big deal out of it, but it's not a big deal. It's for the Ukrainian people.
Oh, it's a media event. I get that. But still, they are killing Russian civilians.
And electronic warfare is bringing the drones down. That is not expensive. They're just shutting them down midair with electronic warfare.
I have no direct knowledge. I'll take your word on that. I know they do have surface-to-air missile issues. They have man pads, and they do have EMF tech that can bring it down, too. I know, but trying to watch from here and get a real tight... You've got sources, so that's one reason, one of many, why people should listen very carefully what you say. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so we simply cannot depend on the Chinese nor Koreans to launch the nuclear war. If we want to get something done, we must do it ourselves. China will then launch a retaliatory strike on us. In this scenario, the China problem is dealt with, and China will be in a sorry strait and perhaps ready for the Great Reset to impose. China does not have a good civil defense program, but it can afford to lose a lot of people and could recover faster than other areas. China is a major concern for the World Economic Forum, a major concern because in this vacuum of power in the world, the Chinese will still be there. so they have to take them up. That is why we saw that change at the State Department. There's more focus on China because they're not the threat to America. They're a threat to the World Economic Forum. Okay, and we're not fighting for America. You got to remember that. So we have been preparing for the Middle Eastern theater of war for decades. Since 1979, we have kept the Muslim Arab world destabilized, first by allowing the Shah of Iran to be overthrown in 1979 to destabilize the Persian Gulf and put us into a permanent low-intensity conflict in the region. Second, by setting the Arab nations against Iran, a war between Shia and Sunni to deflect from the Arab conflict with Israel. In 1980, we encouraged Iraq to attack Iran. The war burned on for 8 years and kept the U.S. Navy engaged in the Persian Gulf until this very day. And then in 1990, we invaded Iraq after Iraq invaded Kuwait, egged on by April Glaspie in the State Department. We remained engaged in a low-intensity conflict in northern Iraq for over a decade. In 1993, we engaged in Somalia and ensured that it remained a failed state. In 1996, we butted into the Yugoslav civil war under the pretext of protecting Muslims in Bosnia. In 1999, we invaded Serbia under the pretext of protecting the Muslims in Kosovo. In 2001, we invaded Afghanistan using the 9/11 terrorist attacks as a pretext. We stayed for 20 years. In 2003, we invaded Iraq again under clearly false pretenses. We stayed until 2011, but returned from 2013 to 2017 to fight ISIS. ISIS gave us a pretext to permanently station U.S. troops in Syria and Iraq. We have major military U.S. bases in Kuwait, Bahrain, and Qatar. We did all of this under the pretext of the global war on terrorism. We did it to control and weaken Islamic nations because they are a competitor to the World Economic Forum. We used the Israel situation to permanently destabilize the Middle East. We have carried our support for Israel to absurd levels of brainwashing. In March 2024, this month, I listened to an announcer on Christian Broadcasting Network declare that, quote, whoever is persecuted in Christ's name, like Israel is now, will be spared from their enemies by Christ.
Mitch, hold on. Would you say that again? I'm not sure I understood that. Please.
Well, it's because it's shocking is what the problem is. Whoever is persecuted in Christ's name, like Israel is now, will be spared from their enemies by Christ. This is Christian Broadcasting Network saying that.
Oh, man, have they been penetrated. Jeez.
Oh, yeah. Trust me, Israel is doing absolutely nothing in Christ's name. And to imply that the cold-blooded murder and genocide of over 15,000 children in the Gaza Strip is in Christ's name is like saying that Christ supports abortion. Christ is actually very specific about his anger for those who harm little children. The apocalypse in the book of Revelation is not about saving Israel or the Jews. It is about saving those who faithfully follow Christ. Israel is 65% atheist, has laws against evangelizing for Christ, and is the gay Mecca of the Middle East. Israel is absolutely not being persecuted in Christ's name. Israel is a persecutor of Christians. Uh-huh. The American narrative is delusional. Jerusalem is intended to be the world capital of the World Economic Forum's project. The Atlantic Magazine published a cover article this month saying that that anti-Semitism will destroy American democracy. Just exactly how, I wonder.
Such an assertion is
a major stretch. Harper's put out a cover article in March blaming AI for Israel's lack of response to the Hamas attack on October 7th.
Oh, yeah. This is all science fiction. It's all lies. Honest to God, the Jewish state.
This is mainstream
is
media. This
masters.
Is mainstream.
I know, but they control. They're masters at reversing reality. It's astounding to me how they do it. They really are. Well, they've been practicing for thousands of years, so I guess they got it right. But, I mean, when you have the media in your back pocket, you can do anything. And the lives I've seen and you've seen and many of you listening have seen are stupendous, and yet they seem to get away with it. I just, I laugh. I'm sorry. It's not funny, but it's really something else watching these people work. Go ahead.
Government propaganda about the Middle East, trying to control the narrative, is what you would call chatter that indicates that things are going to get worse. On top of that, you have Congress trying to shut down or control TikTok because they say that they say this: it spreads lies about what happened in Israel on October 7th and caused massive protests against Israel. I can assure you that governments throughout history have never shut down lies. That is usually unnecessary. They only quash truths. The truth is dangerous to power. Lies are not dangerous to power. Okay. At any rate, at some point, we can expect Hezbollah to go to war with Israel, and then eventually the Arab world and Turkey will jump on board. That will probably happen when the Second American Civil War breaks out. I mean, the Second American Civil War is critical to throwing the world into turmoil, because it gives everybody the opportunity to go ahead and make their move. With the USA out of the way, they can do what they want. The Second American Civil War will lead to World War III, just like the Spanish Civil War led to World War II. History repeats itself because the same people plan it, and they are usually not very original.
Right.
World War I brought us the League of Nations. World War II brought us the United Nations, the World Bank, and the International Monetary Fund, and the Bretton Woods financial system. World War III will bring us the Antichrist's New World Order, run with the help of absurdly woke artificial intelligence, with central bank digital currency using blockchain technology. This is how they will manage the Great Reset, where you will own nothing and be happy, and you will be happy whether you like it or not. Happiness will be mandatory in the Antichrist's earthly paradise.
There's your best line right there. Happiness will be mandatory. You got it right there. Now, this is it's all so over the top now. It just is. It's stupefying. Now, this TikTok thing is fascinating. I don't know much about TikTok. I've talked about it a little bit on the program here and there, but it does present quite often some remarkably frank and truthful statements about geopolitics, etc. It doesn't seem to be censored nearly as much as most of your
well,
cast of characters.
It's not controlled by American Jewish companies.
Remember what they did.
When we look at Elon Musk, keep in mind he has kowtowed to the Jews also.
Okay. Yes, of course he has. The House of Representatives last week, as all of you know who were paying attention, passed that bill that could lead to a nationwide ban on TikTok, right? Unless, and this is what the bill says, its Chinese owner, ByteDance, sells its stake in the company within 165 days. Well, it's 6 months. Guess who's already organizing a buyout of TikTok to allow it to continue to function? Former Treasury Secretary Mnuchin and Jewish money. They're going to buy it. They'll own TikTok in all likelihood. That's the way it looks. So they passed this law to make it available for a Jewish takeover. That's what they're doing.
Remember, in Congress, they specifically said they had to shut it down because of all the information that came out from TikTok about what was going on in Israel, especially the stand down of the IDF. Okay, that's a big sore spot for them that information got out.
Right.
I want the audience to know that when October 7th happened, the information I got about the IDF shutting down did not come from TikTok. It came from sources in the Middle East. Okay,
got it.
Not from TikTok. So they'll still be out there, but those sources are not available to everybody. TikTok is. Most of the reports that I got eventually made their way to TikTok within a few weeks. and become widely available. So TikTok isn't controlled by the United States government, so it was able to speak the truth. But the reason why all these people went out and protested against Israel didn't really have anything to do with TikTok. It had to do with Israel openly and blatantly committing genocide in the Gaza Strip.
Right.
That was unmistakable. They can't hide that. We just want to blame TikTok. Okay.
So the bottom line is they don't ever want to ban. They only want to ban things and cancel things and try to take over things that our truth is getting out there. And TikTok, you know, China owned or not, you know, it's one of those things. It's Trojan horse. If they get a hold of that, it's another resource that where they have control of it and they just get to peddle their lies. This is Revolution Radio, Revolution.Radio on March 20th, 2024. And this is High Noon. We'll be back in 2 and 2 here on the radio. So stand by. See you in a moment.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Industrial Complex podcast here on Revolution Radio, Studio B, every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Get fit, empowered, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Interrupt your normally scheduled programming to bring you this important broadcasting announcement.
Now is the time to explore your greatest potential, embracing truth, health, and wellness while discarding the system and exposing its corruption. Experience true freedom every Saturday night between 6 and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Studio B. It's the Jonathan Wright Show.
Find it right here at revolution.radio.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number 3 is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne. And I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition 1, as we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in. And I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the unequivocal truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
The original machine had a base plate of prefamulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two swerving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fan. The lineup consisted simply of 6 hydrocoptic Marzal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal lotus o-deltoid type placed in panendermic semi-voloid slots of the stator, every 7th conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the gram meters.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative media radio on the planet.
All right.
right. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.net, freedomslips.org, for revolution.radio on this day, March 20th, 2024. And this is High Noon. This is The Brew with you all day long, all at least for 2 hours, 120 minutes or less, with you on this network. Studio A, Studio B, 7 days a week, depending on what is available for, a host to be available to share something, whether it be live as this is currently, kind of, sort of, with my intros and outros, or maybe somebody decided to jump on and play a clip of something or another. And we always have the Studio B on off hours on many nights of the week where they play the best of Art Bell, which is something that you might want to tune into if you want to get nostalgic. You know, I once ran through and I have that actual app to where they played the best of Art Bell. I actually ran through it last year. Like, literally, I heard from one all the way, like, every Art Bell show, pretty much from end to end, all the way through his ups and downs and his vacations, and he's going off the air because something suspicious was happening, and all the way through to his death. And, you know, it was pretty crazy because I really didn't listen to Art Bell in those formidable years when he was on the air. Really didn't pay attention to it too much. But in any case, here we are at Revolution Radio. This is something that is modern day in the era of 2024, that is AD after Christ. So anyway, what do I got for you? Oh, what I got for you? I got a whole radio network here. All radio network that is powered by you, the listener, contributor, the participants. And, many of you were once hosts that are just listeners, or were hosts that became listeners became hosts, or in between, or potential hosts out there. Who knows who you ever you are, but you're out there and you're digging it, you're liking it. You call Revolution Radio your home network, and I appreciate that. You know, we don't care who you date otherwise, RBN, Rance, Michael Vera. We don't care that you're courting other people. We don't care that you're courting other shows. We don't care that you're, maybe even some of you sickos out there, there's one of you that might be tuning in to Rachel Maddow. I don't know, but you better cut it out. That's poison in your mind. But nonetheless, we do know you come back to Revolution Radio because you want to get a more broader view of things, whether it be, again, more commentary out of some of these hosts, or, some decent guests on many of these shows, or, picking our brain in the cobwebs and see what we come up with today, like I came with Mitchell Henderson in the last hour with Jeff Rentz. So if you missed it, it was a good show. I don't know how many of you actually have access to archives for such things, so I played it for you because Mitchell Henderson is a decent dude and he brings some decent content to the network. And even though it kind of curdles your stomach and, how they opened it up, they're after you. They're after the white people. The white people got to die. Then one way or the other, they're going to eliminate you. They're going to mongrelize you, or they're going to freaking,
you know, put you 6 feet under. One way or another, they're, you know, you're on the radar. But in any case, Revolution Radio, Revolution.radio, the homepage. If you can share a donation, share a cup of coffee, what they call it, cup of coffee, some crypto, some something, send a bag of apples, I don't care, whatever it may be. But to help keep this bandwidth rolling and flowing and the servers up and going and so on and so forth, and it is much appreciated. Now, I have a little segment. One of our own hosts, Scott McKay, played the other night. He brought on a guy talking about the financial sector, mostly about precious metals and the banks and so forth, and how the banks back in 2023, well, I'm just laying it down here for a moment. It'll tell you, it'll be a moment before I get to it. But we had those bank collapses in early 2023. You know, there was at least five big ones that they scared us with, and they took their money. And, you know, for one reason or another, whatever they were mixed up with, they shut those banks down and so forth. But so in order not to create a panic, the FDIC, the government created a fund. You know, those that nefarious government created a fund that bailed out these banks of over a tune of over $1 trillion and so forth. And so it didn't create such a panic and so forth. But, you know, so that only stabilized for the moment. Now, ever since then, it's probably been, you know, we see articles for bank closures and branch closures, you know, here and there, you know, Wells Fargo and so forth, that just closing down branches and so forth. And other smaller banks that you probably never even hear about, but they have been disappearing. But they're leading up to another point to where they're gonna allow a bunch of other banks to fail because these money changers, these synagogue Satan, you know, bastards, they've been draining the world. You know, they've been the world is a casino, and it's your money they're gambling with. So through all their nefarious activities, if they're not buying themselves yachts and jet airliners and, you know, gourmet meals by 6-star Michelin hotels and so forth, you know, living a lifestyle and so forth, they're taking our money and giving it to NGOs so they can destroy, and it's money's going into war and other countries, every place but your backyard. So if you're in the United States, you know that, you know, they're giving away billions and billions and mega billions of dollars to all these other countries and all these other initiatives and NGOs and so forth, but not a single dime to help bail you out. But that's what they do. But they're straining into their banks and so forth. Excuse me, I didn't mean to cough in your ear like that, but like I said, I was getting over a cold the last couple of weeks, but it's still congestion city. But anyway, they don't do a damn thing for us, period. So you need to be taking care of yourselves, and that's what we're going to lead into. They're going to talk about the bank collapses and the FDIC. They're going to do a little history here. But there's going to be a main focus on, you know, of course, commodities. Commodity, what kind of commodity? Silver, an emphasis on silver. Silver is going to be the more high demand. It's going to be the more probably growth product as far as your dollars increasing in value, silver, because of all the uses it has for silver in the tech and auto and energy and electronics and so forth. Silver is the mainstay. But that's what they're going to talk about, and we're going to do that. And that won't be too long of a segment. It's in 10, 20 minutes range. But I want to try and dig something else up for you. Meanwhile, don't forget, this being Wednesday, you know, my lineup, my call for a lineup is now screwed up. This is screwed up. Okay, my mainstay here is Brooke Zagnew. Brooke Zagnew is going to follow High Noon at 7 p.m. Central Time, X Squared Radio, and that'll go on for 2 hours. And that next time slot is, I don't know what's going on there. I don't know, maybe... Will the hijacker make a return to bring his flavor of thoughts of the universe to us? Oh, I was like, "What? Where is that coming from?" Hope you didn't hear that. Anyway, it's another player on the side there. I'm like, what? Where'd that come from? But anyway, hey, so maybe the hijacker will come back for 2 hours after Brooks Agnew, and that'll be 9/11. And that was formally held by Look Into the Hologram by those two ladies who now hold the Friday night time slot at around, six or 7 p.m. Central Time on Friday evenings. They're holding that spot. But then now we lost. We lost a great show, which I'm not sure what's going to happen this week. That would have been Get a Grip, formerly known as the High Council. It's ran since, 2018, 2019, the High Council ran, and then Mechanic took over the hosting spot for that. And then a couple months or so back, he changed the name to Get a Grip, and any number of cast of characters would join him on that debate table, and so on and so forth. Now, I've always had an open invitation to that time slot. Now, I don't frequent on a lot of shows like I used to. I don't call in a lot of the radio networks anymore, and I don't really jump on air with too many people. But I always had an open invitation to go on to Get a Grip or a High Council, whichever it may be. And, I can look at my Skype right now, and, I had invitations to the StreamYard since he started his Rumble channel and so forth. And he asked me, why don't I ever come on? Don't I ever come on? And I made up an excuse. I'm making excuses. It's because it's kind of late and I do have to work in the morning. And sometimes I do. And just sometimes I just got nothing to say don't want to be in a rowdy conversation because there could be a lot of rowdiness going on and people that I might not agree with. And I don't want to get, hot under the collar. I don't want to keep my even temper. So, I don't want to, whatever. I'm just keeping it cool. So whatever. So, but one of the things I did mention to him, and this was a few weeks back, and I says, I listened to that last show you had because it's right after he just asked me, and he's like, why don't you come on? And I'm like, I made my excuse and so forth. But then I was like, that last show you had on with that other guy, and this guy, he calls himself Midlife. This dude freaking just made my skin crawl. Okay, he made my skin crawl. He was like giving out some mainstream narrative stuff, and they were like, let us tell you the truth about that. It was really frustrating. Now, I listened to that show, and the very last show I ever heard of, a couple weeks went by maybe. And then the very last show I heard with Seth Mechanic and the cast of characters, they had that guy on again. I think it was maybe a Sunday night show. And he made my skin crawl, let me tell you. And I did everything. I was going to get on air and I was going to rip freaking new ones, let me tell you. But I pulled back and I said, I'll let it go. Boom. I just let it go and eventually shut it off because that guy was so damn annoying. But if any of you ever here come across this personality out there, do not bring him back. That is enough to give me a coronary. He made me hot under the collar. This stupidity that was coming out of this flacker's mouth was just absurd. So, literally, we're 1,000 steps forward, and to have a doofus like that bringing us, 1,000 steps back, it is just, absurd. Gosh damn it, that was a rant. I apologize. All right, so anyway, let me do this clip here, and then we're going to get into Gold and Silver. But, man, if you guys ever come across that character, Midlife, just shut him off. Do not. How you cannot want to wring that fricker's neck is beyond me. That was a good segue. All right, let's get into this. Who is this? Dr. Kirk Powell. 500 bakes failing in 2024. So Might be a little boring for some of you. You know, it gets a little long-winded, kind of like myself. But there is a point here.
It's coming. I mean, we're ahead of the curve by a lot, right? So over this last year, because I knew that was phase one, I knew there was going to be bank failures 2.0. Because why didn't more banks fail back then? Well, it's because they had this stupid bank temp funding program that they instituted, where the Fed was just going to inject a bunch of capital into failing banks so they could avoid more bank runs. But what was that? That's just stimulus money. It's money that they're printing out of thin air with money that they don't have, which is why interest rates went through the roof. But that is why they didn't have more bank failures. Well, guess what? That program sunset. It expired on March 11th. They didn't renew it. No more emergency funding for banks. So now, as of a week ago, if any banks are going to fail, they're going to fail. There's no more emergency funding, right? So that's why we didn't have FDIC extinguish itself completely, because the Fed stepped in, provided emergency funds, so the banks didn't have to go into FDIC receivership with a run on the banks. Now that that program is defunct, it's gone, there is no more money. It's like, imagine if you're a politician, Scott, and you're voting for emergency funding and you want this done. And you know, as well as I know, that banks are supposedly, at least in a person's headspace, the safest asset in the world. So this is the one thing that they don't want to fail. Because if you start to get banks across the country failing, you lose confidence of everybody, and it's an election year. So now what? I think this situation with the federal government is so dire. They know that they can't keep printing money. The inflationary pressures are too high. You can't keep raising rates. So therefore, they let their untouchable thing, banks, right? They say, okay, maybe they can fail. We simply don't have enough money. Why else would you decide to go down that policy initiative unless you were truly out of money, and let the one thing, the sacred cow that you don't want to fail, the banking system, you're going to allow to fail? I mean, so part of me thinks, okay, why would they want this to happen? Number one, they simply don't have enough money and they have to let it go this way. Or number two, they actually want the banks to fail because they have something else that's coming, which we've talked about, central bank digital currency. Nobody in their right mind ever would say, give me that. Mm-hmm. Give me that central bank digital currency garbage that you're pushing down my throat, because I want to have my every transaction that I have at any bank in any state in any country fully monitored in real time. And I want the ability for you, the government, to cut me off from buying or selling if my ideology doesn't match up with yours. Mm-hmm. I want to lose all of my ownership of my deposits through a concept called beneficial ownership and unified ledger, which the Bank for International Settlements has put in place. So basically, with the flip of a switch, they can switch ownership based on your own digital social profile, your social credit score, your ESGs of your company. It's like, nobody would want that. I mean, seriously, who would say yes, unless you're mentally unstable, that that's a good idea? Nobody. But if they can collapse the system, people would want that garbage because they just want to feed their family, pay their rent, pay their mortgage, pay their utilities, and actually survive. So in my mind, either it is so dire that they absolutely have no money, or this is what they want. And that, because if things get so bad, people will willingly give up their freedoms in exchange for that. Either one of those outcomes is a bad one to me. Either one is bad. But here's where we sounded the warning bell in January of 23. I'm sounding it again with you, Scott, right here, right now, because I think bank failures is the big financial story of the year, and it's going to be devastating. And we have this weird political environment right now, and something happening. It's an election year. See, in an election year, what are people voting for? They're voting for a change of government. Mm-hmm. Everywhere across the world where there's a vote this year, where people are going to the polls, assuming that their vote is actually going to count. they're going to the polls to change the government. Mm. It's no different here. It's no different this time. What do they want to change? People are wanting something to change where the economy can start growing again, where they can feel safe in the streets, where they know that the government's doing everything that they can do to provide a framework for success so we can live, so we can work, so we can enjoy life. This is what people vote for. Sadly, they're mistaken this year. That's not what we're voting for. I don't even know if our votes are going to count this year, right? But what we have in front of us now is something that's completely different, and it's a change in the monetary system globally, domestically, where I think the era of central banks printing paper money by fiat is over. The era of central banks isn't over, but printing private paper money is, because they're going to transition us into a digital version that's all about people control. And I think this year, and banks failing is the precursor to that. So what do we do, right? It's like you asked this question early on. It's like, well, I've got this excess capital in the bank. What should I do? Get it out? Literally, we don't know when the next bank that's going to fail is going to fail. And B, we don't know if that bank is going to be ours, right? So therefore, get your stuff out of the bank. I'm not saying get rid of all your cash, because we need cash to live on. We're still living in a cash world. So you still need an emergency fund. You still have operating expenses. But I would say 3 to 6 months of expenses and cash is all that you need. If you have excess, like a lot of my clients do, they've got all this money sitting in there because they've heard us talking. And they said, Kirk, we hear you on the economy. We know that it's bad. We know that under Biden's economic plan for America, unemployment is sky high. We know that inflationary pressures are there. We know that they keep raising rates and the cost of borrowing. We're afraid that the stock market's going to hit the skids. So therefore, we're just sitting in cash at the bank. You know, that was a fine thing to do 5 years ago. It was like I would say, yeah, do that. I mean, if you think the stock market's going to fail, then get out and sit in cash. I can't say that anymore, because we don't know that the banks are no safer than the stock market.
Yeah.
So therefore, minimize your cash position to 3 to 6 months of expenses, and I would put the rest into silver. And I know you've got comments on this, but we're going to explain why silver as opposed to something else before we're done with the show.
Let's jump into that. I mean, it's a pretty simple answer, and I think performance-wise, we've seen that that's played out in the last 3 years.
Yeah, so check this out. Since February 28th, which is 2.5 weeks ago, the ratio between silver and gold, how many ounces of silver it takes to buy 1 ounce of gold, has gone from 91 and some change to 85 and some change. It's moved 5%. It's moved, 5% from 91 to 85 in that time frame. That's 2.5 weeks. See, the reason why we're in silver is because the ratio at 91 to 1, which is what it has been for a bit, is the highest ever. That means silver is going to outperform. And let's say we go from 90 to 60. That's 1/3 of, 60 is 2/3 of 90. So therefore, it moved by 1/3 down. We could sell our silver, go into gold, and essentially you would get on that 25% more ounces of gold for free than what we could have purchased today, right? So it's like, okay, this is amazing. Then it goes from 60 to 30, we do it again. You get another 20. I mean, you can increase your ounces in gold for free, really, because all we're doing, there's a cost of buying, but when you subtract that from the amount of ounces that you gain, you have a ton of free ounces.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we're doing. So we get down to 60. We've gone from 90 to 85 really quick. So within the next few months, we could have our first ratio trade if it stays on this trend. And then another 6 months after that, we could do the same. See, I was looking at a chart of the gold to silver ratio. In 2011, we basically went from 60-something down to 30-something in 8 months. Okay. So that would have been doubling your ounces in 8 months. In 2020, we went from 120 to 60 something in 11 months. So when these ratios start to move, we have the, those were doubling of ounces, right? So this is incredible. So we could see the same thing, and it's going to happen quickly. It'll happen in, you know, a 3 to 6 month span. We will lock in those profits, but this is why we're in silver. Now, what's happened to silver over the last few weeks? It's gone as it moved. As that ratio moved from 91 to 85, that's a big percentage gain. Silver went from upper 22s to low 25s. I mean, like, and then we bumped up to mid 25s on Friday. So we're over $25 an ounce. Here's something amazingly technical for the people that are watching this. And I'm not a technical trader. I don't care. I care about fundamentals, interest, inflation, political chaos, geopolitical conflict. Those are the fundamental forces that always cause gold or silver to move, or anything to move, stocks or anything, right? So as I look at that, those are the fundamentals. But technically speaking, what just happened is when we peaked above $25 an ounce, we hit a 15-year moving average resistance point. We just passed a 15-year resistance point. So now that we're above it, you remove the resistance. That former ceiling becomes our new floor, and there's little resistance moving forward. So this is where I think that ratio trade, the acceleration of silver, could really start to happen. Of course, nothing goes straight up. Nothing goes straight down. But the growth line, the acceleration, since we just hit that point, should accelerate a lot. And I know that I've got people, you know, Patriot, Street Fighter Nation people, said, Kirk, you've been talking about silver for a while, and it kind of went sideways for a year. Yep, it did. But you know what? It took time. Now we've caught up to a 15-year moving average. We've creeped our head above it. We surpassed that old ceiling. Now that becomes our floor. So all of you that have had patience, our time is coming, right? Because what's happening and what causes that? What causes that move? The story of the bank failures? Yep, sure does. How about the story of limited supply? Yep, that does too. Because when you look at the global aggregate demand for silver, which the people over at Wall Street Silver, you know, the same Wall Street Bets people that caused the GameStop AMC short squeeze a couple years ago, where GameStop went up like 1,600% in a month. So their research is showing that there's 1.2 billion ounces of silver already committed for this year from manufacturers. There's 1 billion ounces coming out of the ground. Simple math. That's a 200 million ounce shortfall. Not enough silver. When you don't have enough silver and the manufacturers need it, which is why we do bullion and not that rare garbage that you see on other channels. It's like rare stuff that sells for a high commission, high premium. I've never seen anybody recover from that. Bullion, a global commodity, manufacturers need it. That's what moves dollar for dollar with the markets, right? So that's why we go into it. Minimize your cost, maximize your ounces. When manufacturers need it, and if they don't get it, they can't have a finished product. They can't do fuel cells. The Department of Defense can't make missiles or torpedoes. Tesla can't make cars, right? I mean, you need silver. So therefore, they would pay any price necessary, because it's not like a car is 100% silver. Stupid to think that. It's the circuit boards, the solder points, some of the electrical things that are needed. The fuel cell technology uses silver. It's not 100% of the car. So the ounces that they need, if they don't get it, they can't have a finished product. So therefore, they'll pay any price, because they're just going to pass it on to the consumer. This is the world that we are now living in, and why I think silver is going to absolutely accelerate and go through the ceiling. Now, you couple that price action plus bank failures. Bank failures are going to cause more than people making a run on the banks. Bank failures are going to cause the stock market to come crashing down to earth too. Because what do banks invest in? Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, real estate companies. The same thing you and I invest in, except on a larger scale. So what are they going to have to do? They're going to have to start liquidating to make ends meet. That's going to put a lot of selling pressure on the market and prices come down. I'm just trying to connect some very logical dots here for people watching that says, okay, Kirk, why would you say that we need to get our money out of the banks? For everything that I just said, why should we go into silver? For everything that I just said, you know, because just getting out of something isn't enough. That's half the equation. Getting out of something that's coming down and going into something that's going up. Now you've got full protection and you're in thrive mode. And that's what we want for everybody.
Yeah. And the process whereby, for those people who haven't listened to this channel, maybe just stumbled across it, the process to make this happen, to have a conversation, to get into potentially silver, it's pretty simple. And it's just a matter of, if you go to psfsilvergold.com, PSF Silver Gold, you can do a little research reading there. It's a page connected to us. Put your information in and it'll go to them. And of course, I'll reach out to you if you'd like to get to them quickly, although sometimes after shows they get jammed up a little bit, but you can call directly. And that number is it's on the ticker here. You'll see in the description, 720-605-3900. And you can just call up and ask to talk to those folks over there, Dr. Kirk or whoever, and see what fits your situation. I'm a very unsophisticated investor. So I like the simplest thing possible. If I could afford, you know, a piece of land or, silver, the idea that I like about silver, I like to have more land, obviously, but the land's only worth what somebody's willing to give you money for. If you had to sell it, liquidate. Silver pretty much is easy to liquidate, I don't think I'm speaking out of school on that. And you get access to your money quickly. Am I right? So if somebody does have silver and they say, I want to sell my silver, or instead of, you know, making the transition, with the ratios changing in our favor to get gold, if they just wanted to get their money out and take the profits they've made on that over the course of time holding it, how do they do that?
Well, it's easy with us because bullion is a global market that you don't have to make a market for. It's already there because it's a manufactured metal when you use bullion. So all I do is make a 45-second phone call to the depository. We lock it in. Within a week or less, you get your funds wired into your account. It's easy. So couple that, you know, or parallel that with the companies that are selling old, rare, semi-numismatic coins, you know, collectible stuff, things that have these premiums. There's not a ready-made market for that. You actually have to have a sales team calling people. So let's say, Scott, that you had a bunch of old silver dollars, Morgan dollars or something like that. And it's like, well, I've got this silver and it's rare and it's going to have this cool double play on the growth because it hasn't been minted since the late 1800s. And I'm so excited about it. And it's hundreds of dollars an ounce. It's like, oh yeah, try to sell it when nobody wants it because all they want is bullion. And if you were to have $50,000 worth of that junk, you'd have to call the dealer that you bought it from and say,
okay, well, that was a decent segment. Hopefully you got something out of it. If you can follow along, again, it's a little boring, a little long-winded. But the point is banks are failing, maybe upwards of 500 individual banks here in 2024 as they lead up to as they dry up this cow they call America. As they dry it up and, you know, to get us to blow away, they're going to destroy the banks, which a lot of people – you know, consider their favorable institution where they keep their cash. As long as they got the cash in the bank and they can pay the bills, they feel okay. But, you know, that's a risky endeavor because, you know, if they, depending on what your net worth is, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, whether you got $1,000 in the bank or $100,000 in the bank, the FDIC will not be able to insure because there's so many banks that are going to go down. There is no coverage there, you know, so they all always said all these years, $250,000 is insured per individual client, but that is no longer the case. There is just too much money unavailable. They won't be able to cover it. So just keep enough in your banks to cover your bills for the next 30, 60 days at a time. But if you can ever afford it, you know, hedge yourself into silver and whatever else that you can keep keep in stock for yourself. That's, you know, because also inflation's going up, so not just a, you know, silver is going to increase in value, but, you know, the cost of goods and services is going to increase in value. So if there's other commodities, you know, food, dry storage, whatever the case may be, bullets, you name it, you know, get it while it's still, well, before it rises even more. And that's what prices are going to do, rise, 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 because that's what's coming down on us, their reign of terror. I got a piece here from James Fetzer from today. I don't know. They're talking about, he did a couple segments today, one on his Raw Deal program that was found here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.org, freedomslips.net, revolution.radio. James Fetzer at Studio B was reviewing a new book, new JFK version of the events of John F. Kennedy, the murder of John F. Kennedy. And he reviewed a new book on that. And he also, on his RBN show, did a segment talking about it. And then one of his callers was outspoken. You know, she just, I don't get her sometimes. Sometimes she sounds, you know, hey, yeah, you know, she's dialed in. And another time she's just, I don't know what she's doing. She's mocking us. I don't know what it is. She's old. She's pissed. She's had it. Yeah, as many of us have had it. But in any case, she rubbed Fetzer the wrong way. So we're going to dial in and hear him explain her, because she's got her version of John F. Kennedy, and she wants to pin it on Dulles. But, you know, Fetzer's like, hey, there's so many other characters involved here. Dulles is just, you know, helped the cleanup guy, but he wasn't present and part of the setup of the murder of Kennedy itself.
Well, Renee, let me make just two comments here, and then you can reply. The first has to do with Alan Dulles. Now, he's just a fall guy. Even E. Howard Hunt said the chain of command, and this is something he explained to his son, St. John, when he thought he was dying. He actually recovered, but at the time it was a near-death confession, that the chain of command went from LBJ to Cord Meyer to David Atlee Phillips to William Harvey to David Sanchez Morales. And on the scene, we had George Herbert Walker Bush and Edward Lansdale, who I may or may not have mentioned, appears to have positioned the shooters and determined the sequence of shots. Alan Dulles was not. He was there to cover it up, yeah, on the Warren Commission.
Yeah.
But Tucker doesn't know enough about this. And I think it's a book by Talbot, David Talbot, that gives this misleading impression of Alan Dulles being this powerful force. It was Lyndon. It was only Lyndon who could guarantee no one would be punished. It was only Lyndon who could, you know, get rid of all the inquiries and create a Warren Commission. It was only Lyndon who could put his buddy J. Edgar, who'd been involved in the whole plan from the beginning, to be the sole investigative authority. So don't be played by this Alan Dulles nonsense. Now,
certainly there were more people involved, okay? I'm not saying just Dulles, and they didn't either. But Dulles played a part, absolutely. LBJ was in it,
Renee, I'm right in the middle of a big discussion about this. Did you catch our first part of the show, you know? This new book by David Manick on the medic. Okay. I spent the whole first part of the show talking about this, all right? So if you go to my blog at jameshfetzer.org, go to unz.com, and you'll find the new book that nails how JFK was taken out in Dulles. It's generating a huge discussion thread, okay? I have 30 years of research on JFK with the best people ever brought together, Renee. Okay, so I'm just saying, in terms of big picture,
am I ever going to talk in this call like Peter?
Renee, don't insult me. I gave you plenty of time. Give me a break, woman. You're insulting me. I don't like that. If you think you're ever going to come on here again and be obnoxious like that, I give you plenty of air time. I'm squaring you away about Dulles being a fall guy, a patsy. It was Johnson, LBJ. Read a book by Phil Nelson, for example, or even Roger Stone has a book about the case against LBJ. It doesn't leave any doubt about it. Now, as far as what's going on now in the Lampard paradigm and all that. Look, until 2021, until Biden came into office, everything was pretty good here in the United States. During Trump presidency, we had a surging economy. We had closed borders. We had low crime. Everything was actually pretty good. So I think you're being a bit disingenuous if you want to suggest that we had 60 years of misery. No, we were actually doing pretty well right up until this Biden admin came in and started shutting down the country. There's a doubt about this, Renee. So you go ahead and say a few more words here, okay? But I have too many other callers for us to spend more time. Go ahead. Give me a rebuttal.
Look, the way you spin things, it's like I'm some sort of Biden fan, which I am not. I'm neither a Republican or a Democrat. Well, we need to be fair. What's going on now on the border is horrible. But talking about it just starting at the end, actually, you're kind of doing the same thing the Jews did when they just want to talk about that date that Hamas attacked, but they don't want to talk about anything previously, okay? The thing is, we can't just start at Biden. This has been a coup going on for 60 years.
Okay.
Yes,
well,
it has gotten progressively worse, and
Renee,
the thing
thanks.
With the border
Renee,
is
thanks.
Absolutely
yeah.
wrong.
Renee,
the
thanks.
Thing back. Is, it's Friday, and have David Duke with us his first hour tonight. Always great to have David back on the program. About Ukraine, one of the most clever acts I've seen in a long time was how the Zionists moved into Ukraine and raised the issue. This goes back to shortly after the American-sponsored overthrow of the legitimate Ukrainian government. When the Zionists began to take over, they began mm-hmm. to raise the Nazi flag and have everyone look at the Nazi flag and watch this hand. Don't look at this hand over here. They had everyone focused on the issue of World War II Nazi remnants in Ukraine, raising the banner and making a big comeback. But in reality, that was simply misdirection. Hold on.
Talk about misdirection.
And the idea, though, was to keep people looking in the wrong direction. It was all about taking Ukraine over entirely, and now they entirely own and control it. The entire government is Bolshevik Zionist, all of it. All the Zelensky regime is certainly Jewish. They're Zionists all the way, and everyone is still hearing about the evil Nazis. Anyway, very clever stuff. Typical. Hello, David. Welcome back.
Well, I'm so glad to be back, and I think this will be perhaps, and I'm going to go out on a limb a little bit here, but I believe this may be one of the most powerful programs we ever made and we ever had, because we're going to talk about some shocking facts here that are so prescient, are so important to this world, and so real, and it's going to shock people the way I'm going to phrase this. I think it's really going to shock a lot of people out there. And at first, you've got to get a nuanced view of what I'm saying. But then when you think about it a while, you realize what I'm saying is the absolute truth. And the truth is, I'll just start with this, and then we'll work from this thesis, we'll work from this hypothesis. And then we'll construct it and prove what we're saying in the course of the show with facts that we can prove directly out of the mainstream media.
Very good.
But here's what I see as the world. The world has before it, the people of the United States of America, the people of Europe, the people of the entire world are in like the showdown of history. We are in a situation where the real threat to the world, believe it or not, folks, this is, and I'm going to define this carefully, so don't jump to conclusions yet, folks, but the real world is under the threat of coming under absolute Nazi tyranny. Now, when I say Nazism and Nazi tyranny, I'm not speaking about the Second World War or the Germans. I'm talking about the way that Jews in Hollywood and the way that Jews in the media and Zionists present German National Socialism. They didn't call it Nazism, by the way. They call it National Socialism. But the way they present it as the ultimate racism, the ultimate evil, the ultimate murderous phenomenon. The truth is that the the Jewish elite of the world. We can call it the New World Order or the Jewish World Order, or you can call it sure. globalism, you can call it whatever sure. you want to talk about. But it really is an ethnic, racist, Jewish supremacy. And what we're seeing in Ukraine right now is not, it's not a Nazi government, obviously, but it is a Jewish Nazi government. It's a government where you had a Jewish president, prime minister, the only country in European history that had a Jewish president and prime minister simultaneously. The whole government of Ukraine was installed by the Jewish heads of our State Department. First, it was John Kerry. A lot of some people think John Kerry was an Irishman. They think of Kerry's Gold Irish Butter. No, Mr. Kerry's grandfather's name was Cohen. He's a Cohen. It's a Jewish Kohenim. It's like the Got Jewish it. Priest class.
Right. Yeah.
And he was the Secretary of State when they overthrew the legally elected government of Ukraine. They installed a Jewish government. They have Victoria Nuland. Her real name is Noodleman. And she might as well be called, you know, Victoria Juland, because that's what she is. She's married to Kagan. And Kagan is one of the biggest anti-Russians. And, in fact, Jews have had a long-running historical war. I went to school, as you know, in Ukraine. It's important for people to understand when I'm speaking about Ukraine, I live there. I got my doctorate from the largest university in Ukraine, in Kyiv.
Right.
I know Ukraine. I spoke at 100 different groups in Ukraine. And it's true that they used some of these groups, which were partial to the Germans in the Second World War, because you have to understand, when Bolshevism came in to Ukraine and came into what was Russia, and they turned it into the Soviet Union, they killed 20 to 30 million Christians. Yet for some reason, you never hear about this far greater Holocaust than the, quote, Holocaust with a capital H, you know, the what is the trademark, you know, applied for. And right in Ukraine itself, which I studied and I learned about, and has been documented by Jews, too. The man who invented the term genocide was a fellow by the name of Raphael Lemkin. And he invented the term genocide, the destruction of the genes. And he literally pointed out that in Ukraine, 7 to 11 million Ukrainians, it's the leading historians of the world say it goes anywhere. The lowest number is 7, and the highest number is about 11. I actually believe, and I've seen other historians, and I studied this a lot when I was living there and studying for my doctorate, I believe it's more like 13 million. But the point is, this was the greatest infanticide. Which, and by the way, we always consider murdering a child as bad as it is to murder anyone, an old person, a grandmother, a grandfather, or a husband, a wife. But when you kill a child with their whole life ahead of them, like what's going on in Gaza right now, this massive, horrific maiming.
The word is infanticide, and that infanticide. Is exactly what's going on.
But you know that there was a fanticide that came far bigger than this. Was the greatest slaughter of children in the history of the world, probably, in terms of one event, and there were many kids slaughtered in the Soviet Union as well, was in Ukraine. And it's called popular today the Holodomor. And it's 7 to 11 million. And the way that they did this, Jeff, and I hope all your listeners get this really deep into their consciousness and their senses, okay? So what they did was, the Soviet Union, under the Jews, Stalin, by the way, had Jews all around him. There was a conflict going on because Stalin and it had kind of a falling out with him. But the original communism was installed by Leon Trotsky, real name Lev Bronstein, mm-hmm. and Vladimir Lenin. Now, Lenin was a Jewish family. I stood literally as far as I'm from the screen talking to you right now on the air and in terms of my office here, next to the great Alexander Solzhenitsyn, a Nobel Prize winner, great Russian anti-communist patriot, who showed me the papers of the documents of Lenin's family saying that Papa Lenin always identified himself as a Jew. Our family is a Jewish family, right? And he also confided – Well, they didn't have to confide. Everybody knew it. The entire inner circle of the Communist Party, they put out a postcard, by the way, when the revolution first came in. In fact, Trotsky liked to publish this postcard showing the leaders of the Bolshevik Revolution. Uh-huh. And Stalin didn't even show up on the postcard, by the way. This is the early days. And they were all, you know, they're all Jews except one. All Jews. Kamenev, Sverdlov, Leon Trotsky, Lenin, they were all Jews. And Lenin, listen to this, to show you the duplicity and the lies and the disinformation that people put out. So Lenin, even though he himself identified himself to his family and as all of his friend Jews, they all knew he was Jewish, he would pose himself as a Russian. And of course, you know, and there you go. They posed himself as a Russian. And then he told the Russian people in speeches, one of his speeches was a big speech in just absolute worship of the Jews and saying, thank God for the Jews, because without the Jews, the revolution would be possible. Well, he's hiding the fact that he's a Jew, right? But that way he can say, we have to really worship the Jews and we have to really support the Jews, because without the Jews, we wouldn't have this wonderful revolution, right? Where we take in the farms, the homes, the businesses of the Russian people, destroyed their churches, mm-hmm. murdered millions. And of course, what happened was when the Germans came into Ukraine, the people of Ukraine looked at them as liberators from the Bolsheviks, who killed over 7 million, I think 11 million of mm-hmm. their people. And the way they did it was, these Jews, when they stole Russia, that's the greatest prize. I mean, that's the ultimate of capitalism. And by the way, Russia was supported and created by capitalist, rich stockholding Jews, stock market Jews, banking Jews like Jacob Schiff. That was the biggest single contributor. And they have documents. They'll show you this stuff in the Jewish Publication Society out of Philadelphia, where Jacob Schiff put millions and millions of dollars into the pockets of Lev Bronstein, who's known as Leon Trotsky. Yeah. And when the Germans came in, the Ukrainians welcomed them as liberators. That's one reason why there's a fondness for National Socialism in Ukraine. There still is. Now, Jews are always practical and they're always pragmatic. And so one of the ways they created the Second World War, which was the greatest, by the way, it's not the greatest victory, the greatest disaster for European mankind, fact for the world. Yeah, anywhere from 55 too. To 80 million people slaughtered, innocent uh-huh. people. And they were slaughtered for what? Over whether or not the German city of Danzig, which was populated by 95% Germans, which were taken from their own country, whether they should be allowed to reunite with their nation and not be held like hostages after 25 years after the Treaty of Versailles in Poland. And we could have avoided this war and avoided 80 million deaths. I was so disappointed the other day when RFK said, well, he's been against all these wars. The only war maybe he would have been all for was the Second World War. And I say, how could anybody who looks back at this thing honestly was, you know, Germany wanted peace. Germany offered peace. Germany hadn't taken any other country that wasn't theirs. They had a fight with them because they wanted freedom for the city of Danzig. And again, I understand Polish nationalism too. I love the Poles, and Europeans shouldn't fight. But this was a war that could have been avoided. The Bolsheviks came in and killed all the Polish soldiers. In fact, the
was it
Polish
16,000 of them, something like that? The entire officer corps?
Is probably
the officer corps in specific detail was 15,000, I think.
Yeah, and that was the elite of the country, right? But so they murdered them. The Germans actually captured the Polish army with very little loss of life, and almost immediately they furloughed the Polish army officers to go home back to their families, because they wanted to integrate Poland into the, you know, ultimately, especially when the war started with the Bolsheviks, back into Europe. And they really didn't. When they conquered France, an old enemy of Germany's, guess who they allowed the French to select as their leader? He was the strongest French patriot in the country. He was the hero of the First World War, Marshal Pétain. Mm-hmm. And Vichy's France was a government which was elected entirely by the French. It wasn't controlled by German National Socialists. And they elected a government that made peace with Germany, signed the peace treaty, and also supported the war against the Bolsheviks. But anyway, so when the Germans and the other Europeans, and it wasn't just Germany, it was an alliance of many nations. There were many Frenchmen that fought with the German National Socialists. There were Dutch people that did that, Brussels, right? And all across Europe, Italians, Scandinavians, they had volunteer corps. And when they came into Ukraine, they welcomed as liberators. Why? Because just 10 years earlier, a little more than 10 years, in 1934, the Jews, the communist Jews of the Soviet Union and the communist Jews of Ukraine, and by the way, the head of the Communist Party in Ukraine was a Jew by the name of Lazar Kaganovich, and he later became one of the top people in the Soviet Union.
Oh, surprise, surprise. Head of a communist party in anywhere in the world would be a Jew or a Jew trainee, like frickin' CCP and so forth. Anyway, this was Revolution Radio and High Noon on March 20th, 2024. Stand by for Brooks Agnew and Expert Radio, followed by possibly The Hijacker. And then possibly after that, I don't know. It's an open forum. I understand. I don't know. I don't know what's going on that third hour, that third time slot for tonight. But stand in there and check it out, and we'll all be surprised together. Well, anyway, no matter what, be good to one another. Keep your head on a swivel and all the other good stuff. And we'll see you next time on the radio. Revolution.radio. Take care now.
To Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen, with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in